It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Heyo, welcome into the CHGO White Sox post-game show presented by PointsBet. Use promo code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Welcome into Studio B here in the West Loop studios of our CHGO offices. We are very excited to talk to you after a White Sox winner. The Sox pull away in the 10th inning to take a 5-3 victory over the Kansas City Royals. They take the first game of this series, this five-game series. They'll have a doubleheader tomorrow against the Royals, but Herb, it was up, it was down. It started great with Johnny Cueto. It got a little bit iffy with Kendall Graveman, and then here comes La Pantera to save us in the end. Fantastic, fun, and frustrating game is how I'd put it.
Perfect. You perfectly stated. It was Johnny Cueto surprising the hell out of me. I said before the game, I think he's going to be short for the White Sox. He's not long for this team, but hell, that performance right there, baby. Six innings pitched and the movement.
Right.
Early, the movement on the sinker, which I called mistakenly a two-seamer, but it's a sinker, and it induces just bedazzling looks on the Royals hitters. And then, of course, the timing fucking up. Right. He's messing with timing all day long. If Brooks Boyer is watching this, and I know you love CHGO White Sox, Brooks, good to talk to you the other day. Oh, actually, my fiance got to talk to you. A bobble body is the thing he should be having. Like, just doing a little shake. I know people at the podcast are like, what the fuck is he doing? Just imagine a Johnny Cueto top of his body, his upper torso shaking while he has one of his legs, his left leg up in the air and his right hand leg on the mound and just shaking every time. Bobble body for Johnny Cueto.
Yeah, and I just heard that they got the bobble hands on TA's bobblehead for the Field of Dreams one where he's rounding the bases, shaking off, saying this game's over. So they got bobble hands. They should be able to make body torsos, Herb. So just watch out. You'll get the first ever bobble torso Johnny Cueto action figure. You'd also assume that's probably been made before. If they're making a Johnny Cueto bobble figure or bobblehead, they probably are making one that shakes, right?
Yeah, and it's 6:26 out there in Israel, and my man Eli is in the house watching the whole game. And here, man, I don't know how you do it, Eli. You live in a total different country, and if I didn't have to do this job later on, I would have turned that shit off right at the, eighth inning?
After Graveman ties that game up in the third.
Friends.
There's no way I'm watching.
All you guys, Jack, Edgar, Baloney, thank you for being here. Thank you for Dan Payton being here. Jake, man. Mercy, I tell you what, that is a tough game, but luckily the White Sox pull it off in the 10th because we have MVP on our staff.
Yeah, it's Johnny Cueto. Blake name saying it kind of looked like that year. Esteban Loaiza was crazy good for the Sox. The movement was nasty, and each pitch was pinpoint. I believe that was 2003 where Esteban Loaiza was the All-Star Game starter. So Johnny Cueto, get your bags packed. You're going to be starting the All-Star Game for the Chicago White Sox. But yeah, one hell of a game. And Dave said never turn it off. No, we're never going to turn it off on you guys. We're going to be able to bring you a recap of the full 10 innings. But when Eli is out in Israel, and it's 5:30 a.m. out there. 6:30. The man wants to go to bed. But it's 5:30 probably when he ties the game up. He's still, he's being a warrior, staying up to 6:30 here. And Jake says, feel like I've only been here after losses lately, so had to tune in after a win.
Thanks, Jake.
And that's the best feeling, is the Sox do get a win here today. And let's start with Johnny Cueto, because that is where you know, really, you feel the best, honestly, coming out of this game. Let's start with the line. 6 innings pitched for Johnny Cueto. No earned runs allowed. 2 hits allowed. 2 walks surrendered. And 7 Ks. Brad Keller, 7 innings again. He went 7 innings back in early April against the Sox. 3 earned runs, though. 8 hits allowed. No walks. 3 Ks. Johnny Cueto was fantastic. You talked about the timing. You talked about the delivery. That was fantastic, but it was mainly the pinpointness. And Steven said he had a surprise for us. And here comes Rich Tripe being read for the road by Johnny Cueto. You know, the long shot in the Kentucky Derby won it. And hey, maybe the long shot signing for the Sox is going to win it here.
Look at Steven Nicholas, our producer, showing us horse pitchers. And also in the pitcher matchup, he had a picture of Johnny Cueto with his, like, weird-ass hat on. You know, he's about to ride some horses.
His cowboy hat.
Yeah.
We got to get you a cowboy hat.
No, never, ever, ever. Oh, my goodness. But like I said before the game, I was like, no, I'm not impressed by Johnny Cueto. Signed after the season to a minor league deal. This is going to be quick, short-lived. He's going to come out here and get lit up by the Kansas City Royals. Oh, my Jesus, I was wrong. I'll take that L right there. God damn.
Hey, there's a reason they fired their hitting coach, friends.
Seriously, is there anybody out there that thought that Johnny Cueto, firstly with, I knew he had the, you know, the little twitching. I knew he had the quick pitch and messing with timing stuff, but his stuff today was otherworldly. I know you usually track movement. That sinker. The one he froze, I forgot who it was on. It was a beautiful strike 3 call, and it moved from almost hitting, Andrew Benintendi, hitting Andrew Benintendi to hitting the top corner of the strike zone. And I was like, this man is back to 2016, Johnny Cueto. The White Sox said, we picked up the contract of 2-time All-Star Johnny Cueto. And I was like, I'm expecting All-Star performance, and he gave us that tonight. That's how you do it, brother.
He was fantastic. And you're right that the movement was a little bit more. Just looking at StatCast, it said that his horizontal movement was up by a little bit, by a full inch on his sinker. It was up on his fastball. It was just fantastic. And let's go to the pitch mix, because not only was the movement fantastic, but the location was pinpoint, really up to the 6th inning. Then it started getting away from Cueto, but he really did battle in that inning, in that 6th inning. And what I loved was he was running over the damn infield. He was fielding first base. Jose Abreu absolutely muffed a ball. And then Leury Garcia, it bounces right to Leury. And here comes Johnny Cueto running a 4-3-4 over to the first base bag and stepping over it. He showed some hustle in this game. It was good to watch. And you mentioned, like, who would have expected this from Johnny Cueto? And last year, he was pretty decent with the Giants to start off the year. It was once he started getting injured and once the injury started building up for him. To start the season, in his first 3 starts, he was fantastic. He had 20 innings pitched, 13 hits allowed, 4 earned runs, 18 strikeouts, so almost a strikeout an inning, only 4 earned runs over 20 innings, and there was a game where he had 8 2/3, 4 hits allowed, 7 Ks to 1 walk against Colorado, so he showed a little bit of this last year, and especially against the Royals team that is struggling, that is, you know, 12-21, I think, on the year this year. It isn't surprising that he was, you know, effective, but it was surprising that he was good, I think, because there's a difference between being effective and being good. I think you can go back to Kopech on Sunday. So, you know, he was effective. Kopech was effective on Sunday. Cueto was good tonight. And I'm not trying to bash Cueto or Kopech. I know that we had this whole discussion yesterday. But just comparing the two 6-inning outings from the White Sox pitchers,
yeah,
Cueto was fantastic.
Yeah, different opponents, but yes. I would have taken this one completely more than the Kopech one. David G with the tweet so far, or the comment of the night, mostly importantly about Johnny Cueto, not how good his stuff was, that the guy's been around and he knows how to pitch, especially to these young hitters. And let's just hope he keeps it going. He was filling up the zone with strikes. 55 of his 81 pitches were strikes. The guy was, he understood what the rhythm of the home plate umpire was too. He was giving him a ball inside or outside. So Johnny's like, hell, you don't give me, I'm gonna make it work right there. Johnny Cueto is a veteran that knows how to pitch. I just said pitching. Oh, there he did it. Goddamn Giants already stole my idea. Bobble, they got a bobble
body. Bobble. You can look it up on Cueto. Hey, they're only like $20, friends.
I mean, he just does a great job of knowing where these guys' strengths are and their weaknesses and what the pitcher or the umpire is doing for him, and he got the job done. Sinker, slider, fastball, just mixing it in different things. Curveball. Sixth inning, they should have got much more runs off of him. Yeah. There was a hanging curveball that Andrew Benintendi hit really hard. I think about 96 miles per hour. But you see him toss the bat because he know he missed the cookie. I think that's mostly because of fatigue for Johnny Cueto. That's why his sixth inning was kind of off. But for a guy coming off the scrap heap, a guy that was in the minor leagues and didn't do a great job down there, but we talked about that league being an offensive league, this performance, I don't know if anybody could have predicted this specific performance with six innings, seven strikeouts, and only two walks.
Yeah, no one was expecting this. And it's truly, I mean, just crazy stuff, because I mean, he wasn't this good in AAA, and Gordon talked about it on the broadcast, the fact that you make the move to AAA and the major leagues, like, you're obviously going to have more invested in this, you're going to be more emotional. But I mean, again, pinpoint stuff. Let's go to the map where he was locating his pitches. Very, very impressive today. And you could just see most of those balls that end up in the middle of the zone are in that sixth inning when he starts getting more tired and he's not able to be pinpoint. But you see it, it's all on the edge, and if not, if it's not on the edge, it's out of the zone completely. And the Royals hitters were just going into it. And the big thing too, he was always up 0-1. He was up 1-2, and that's exactly what Jack said right there. Pitching with 0-1 and 1-2 counts is what pitching is about. I predicted this game. Good for Jack right there, predicting this game. But Cueto, I mean, the fact that he showed this pinpoint accuracy right here is the reason why he had this much success. Stay away from the middle of the plate, and this is, you know, what happens every day with the White Sox. Basically, pitchers stay away from the middle of the plate, they don't get damaged. And you know, Johnny Cueto did that masterfully today. It was really, really impressive. He did a great job with different arm angles. He did a great job with, you know, speeding up that delivery, like we've been saying, and we said it on the pregame too. If he doesn't walk people, that's going to be the key to success. Only two walks, and he didn't get damaged by them at all. They weren't really bad walks. I think his first one was on four pitches, but mostly, I mean, really just on the plate, on the corner. It was great stuff to see.
And I saw our guy Alex Rude say that, don't worry, the shimmy shake that I did is currently uploading to Twitter, or both of us did, is uploading to Twitter. Hey, man, the more the merrier. Put it out there. I don't care. It doesn't matter. But I appreciate Alex also with some good information that I'll share with you guys a little later about the whereabouts of AJ Pollock. But yes, you're correct. This Johnny Cueto, we immediately were like, it's been real, Vince Velasquez. I hope you enjoy the bullpen.
Yeah.
Because that, even though Vince has done an admirable job and probably the best fifth starter out of the three that we've had with the totality of his performances, but that, what we saw from Johnny Cueto today, nope, that's the fifth starter. Well, I'm sorry, Vince Velasquez. Enjoy the bullpen. Well, it's going to be all good, brother.
Sorry, Dallas Keuchel, too, because they're not going to a six-man. I mean,
he's going to pitch his next time around, though, right?
I guess.
I mean, and I know Velasquez is scheduled to pitch on Wednesday, but if it all shakes out, we saw what we need to see tonight. Mercy.
But the question comes, I mean, it's May 16th. We hear early June for Lance Lynn. Lance Lynn's going to come back. He's obviously going to be in the rotation. So you have Giolito, you'll have Lynn, you'll have Cease, you'll have Kopech. It's either Cueto, it's either Velasquez, it's either Keuchel. Cueto's going to be doing this, and if he stays healthy, I mean, I'm fine with moving Velasquez to the bullpen, leaving Cueto as that fifth starter, and bye-bye Dallas Keuchel.
I mean, yeah. I mean, we can have a guy like Vince Velasquez take over the role that mostly Ryan Burr, who did a good job today, yeah, has manned this year.
We've seen Tanner Banks do it.
Tanner Banks. So those guys are probably at the bottom end of the roster. Vince Velasquez will stay on the roster, I believe. And if Johnny Cueto is this, I know he's not this, but the pitching looked great.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't just about him doing this versus a weak Royals team. Now, the sixth inning notwithstanding, they should have hit him hard. The five innings before, barely anybody could have touched him right then. Or you laughing at it? My guy, Tanny?
Yeah, it's your guy, our guy. Tanny's saying, what about a bobble club for yes? God. I'll hang up and wait for my answer. It's not shocking that you get something original from Tanny. But he's so damn smart.
I mean, yeah, Tanny's the GOAT. Yes, we said this last year, Chris. We said it years before. We need a catcher that can catch.
Reese can.
Just catch the goddamn ball. Right there is 3-1. It was a rocket shot off the bat of Whit Merrifield. But Andrew played it all right after he got the ball. After he got the ball.
Yes.
And after threw he got it the ball into Timmy.
Tim had a great throw.
And Tim threw the ball perfectly to Yasmani Grandal. I don't like. This is not the first time. If you guys recall that Pittsburgh game a couple years ago, ball thrown right to him, dropped it. Pittsburgh walks it off. This is not a thing. They say he can frame. He can't catch. Like, how many times has this man missed balls thrown right at him? It's so frustrating.
Well, we can keep a counter. How about that's our new job? We'll start the counter at one, and we'll have blank many days since Yasmani dropped the ball. All right. So today we'll have 0 days since Yasmani dropped the ball, and we'll see how many more games it takes. He should catch at least one game tomorrow, so we'll see if it comes back. Let's go to Cueto's pitch mix here and see how he did it tonight, because it was mainly dotting, and this is why I like called strikes plus whiff percentage. 31% today for Johnny Cueto. 52% on his sinker and 36% on his fastball. Those two pitches were either in the zone, right on the edge of the zone, or so close that guys were swinging at it, or he was just always in that area. That ump just expands the zone just a little bit, especially for guys like Johnny Cueto, who are veterans and are close enough. So, I mean, he just took advantage of where he was able to locate those pitches tonight. You see the skill in Johnny Cueto. 31% called strikes plus whiff percentage, 17 called strikes. That skill right there, that's dotting, that's locating. Love it.
The 10 called strikes on his sinker. Amazing. Right. Just amazing. They couldn't see it because it usually started outside of the strike zone and then just got a little piece. I don't even know if Andrew Benintendi's pitch that he struck out even got close to the strike zone, but the home plate umpire called it. Hell, Johnny knows how to play the game. Whatever the ump is calling, as long as he's consistent, let's throw it there. So 10, they just looked at those pitches, called strikes. That's amazing. The guy was just on flame today. And if we can get this type of performance from Johnny Cueto each time out, man, I'm just, the sky, like, look at how different today is. We just lost 3 of 4 to the Yankees, and we're looking down. We're like, oh, maybe we're going to hit Lucas Giolito today. Then we see Johnny Cueto being called. I'm like, I guess so. We're going to lose the goddamn Royals because Johnny Cueto is going to suck. No, sir. Now I'm just looking forward to everything. I'm like, man, we got a whip out here.
Yeah.
With pitching staff, we still need to hit a little bit, but we got Lance Lynn coming back in June and Johnny Cueto just on standby?
Well, you need to hit a little bit and the bullpen needs to figure it the fuck out. Because
one dude,
Johnny Cueto was fantastic. I think we had all of our Cueto stuff, right? The balls in play, I think we can look at. These were his balls in play, but as you can see, I mean, it's not in the middle of the plate. I mean, there's not much to say about it. It's a little bit off the plate. Those balls that were hit on sliders on the outside of the zone, those were to righties, so he's keeping away from their power. That's how you work as a major league pitcher. Johnny Cueto is a major league pitcher. You saw that today. Vince Velasquez doesn't do stuff like this because, you know, Vince Velasquez has good stuff, but I don't think that he's ever proven that he is a true major league starter. Johnny Cueto is a former All-Star. Johnny Cueto has finished top 10 in the Cy Young, and he just showed that, you know, this is what makes Adam Wainwright still great. This is what makes, you know, Rich Hill still great. They can locate. They can throw strikes. Johnny Cueto proved that. And if he's healthy, they got something here. It's something to at least entertain. And I saw a question earlier. Do you really think Dallas will be DFA'd with that money? No. If they're serious about winning, yes. If they're serious about winning and their best options are Johnny Cueto and Vince Velasquez, I would hope that they make that move.
And the last thing I got about Cueto is he pretty much pitched to people not on the base. So it was empty bases for the most part. Mm-hmm. That's where I worry about in the future. If he starts getting hit or if he gives up some walks, you know, timing won't be different. You know, you can't really do the shimmy shake while there's a guy on first base, especially with these Kansas City Royals with Nicky Lopez coming in late in the game with Merrifield, also a stolen base threat there. You can't do that. I want to see more of what he can do when guys are on base, if the pitchers are effective at that time, because they know that, like, the stuff in general, not top-notch stuff, that sinker is because of the movement, but slider changeup, not that great. Four-seamers, not that mind-blowingly great. So that's what I want to see. The next time he starts, which probably be, if we're just counting it out, versus the Yankees in the boogie down.
Yeah, I love that. And I would love to see a little bit of improvement from his changeup just to keep guys off. That's one of Dallas's best pitch right now is his changeup. It wasn't really effective tonight for Cueto, but if he has that slider, he has that sinker, he has that changeup, and then that four-seam fastball, he's able to locate it. It's good enough. I think that he showed enough. So health is going to be a big thing for Cueto and making sure that he has that stamina to keep up. What's up, Glenn Wilson with the Super Chat? $4 coming in. As frustrating as the bullpen has been, this offense putting up 3 to 4 runs a game is the biggest concern for this team. Dudes need to start hitting. Well, why don't we talk about that after an ad break?
Oh, you're talking about my ad read. Okay. Yeah.
We're around 20 minutes.
All right.
We just hit 20 minutes on the dot. So, you know, hey, this is why, you know, I produce radio for a bit. I got a great internal clock just hitting 20 minutes on the dot. You know, no big deal. But yeah, we're trying something out because I'm going to be on vacation starting on Thursday. Ooh, Herb's going to be hosting solo. So Herb's going to have to do
hosting solo. I'll have Jarrett in here. And my guy, Stephen Nicholas, will be behind the glass. He'll help
us out. But it's your job to get these ad breaks done. It's your job to keep the traffic flowing.
Then we're fucked. Strava CBD coffee is a game changer. And it's helped thousands of people to improve their overall wellness and quality of life. Like my guy Sean over there. Strava delivers delicious, fresh, roasted specialty coffee infused with organic, broad-spectrum CBD. CBD from hemp doesn't make you feel high or hungry, but it does offer real benefits that help you. You actually know my fiance took some of this Strava coffee when I brought it home. Helped her out too. Yeah. Feel alert, focused without the jitters. Live your day more balanced, less anxiety, fewer aches and pains. Plus, including CBD into your daily routine can even help you enjoy more restful sleep. So when you wake up, you feel your best, Sean. The best part, Strava is all about quality. Everything is in small batch, fresh, and shipped straight to your door. Strava also offers concentrated full-spectrum CBD tinctures for those looking for a more traditional CBD format with a powerful entourage of effect, benefits. CHGO listeners can save 25% off of your first entire purchase when you use the code CHGO25. That's 25% off your entire order at StravaCraftCoffee.com when you use the code CHGO25 at checkout. Also, love Strava? Subscribe and save with Strava Coffee Club. With Strava, you're in control. Save the favorite flavors you have and also automatically deliver them from your home or office or your preferred schedule. That's all that I got the read I have right here, Sean.
There you go. And you killed it. Congratulations.
It's done.
Way to knock it out.
I wish there was another one. Do I have to read that again?
No. You can read it again.
It just like goes to the old version.
I mean, you could just, you know, that just goes to the old version. You could just use code CHGO25 at StravaCraftCoffee.com to save 25% off your entire order and you're done.
One use per customer.
You killed it. One use per customer. Yeah. Don't use it twice. Because if you use it twice, they won't let you use it twice. So only use it once. But, you know, hey, you use it once, and it's great coffee. It is a game changer, a truly game changer. And Herb doing some reads now is a true game changer as well, because I don't know what to do for those minutes. When Herb's reading, I don't know what you do while I'm reading. I don't know what I'm supposed to do while you
water. Somebody asked earlier what was in the drink. It's just water. You'll see when I have some alcohol or some beer. I'll bring it in here.
And Fred said, vacation already must be for a Fleetwood Mac cover band playing Tusk in its entirety. That exists. They're great in Nashville, and I think they're called The World or something like that. So, hey, you know, I know my Fleetwood Mac cover bands, too. It's a great album. You should watch it.
That sounds mid, as the kids say.
It would be extremely mid and boring as hell.
I don't even know what mid means, but it sounds kind of mid.
There's a great line in this rap song, Starting Five, and it's like, your game straight mid like DeMar DeRozan. And you know, it's just, you know, it's the middle of the road. You're just, you know, it's Scott Barlow stuff. Scott Barlow would be mid. You know, Scott Barlow serving up home runs to Andrew Vaughn and Luis Robert. That shit's mid right there.
Fake Mike Clevinger.
Fake and bigger Mike Clevinger. Let's go into the eighth inning and talk about how this got dicey for the Sox. Kendall Graveman could not get an out in the eighth inning, and it was rough. Friends, in the seventh inning, you see Matt Foster come in. He was very good for the Sox. He got, I don't think it was a 1-2-3 inning. It was a 1-2-3 inning. Line out, strikeout, strikeout. And then here comes Kendall Graveman in the eighth inning. Michael Taylor reached on an infield single. Ryan O'Hearn laced a single up the middle. He got Kyle Isbell striking out looking, and it was a great pitch right on the inside corner. Then Whit Merrifield hit his double to left field, bounced right off the wall, right in front of Vaughn. It was a weird play. Grandal ends up dropping the ball at home. Two Royals score, make it 3-2. And then Benintendi singles to right, makes it 3-3. He luckily got a double play to get out of it, but still 3-3 there in the eighth inning. And we needed the White Sox bats to wake up in the 10th inning and 9th inning. Didn't do so in the 9th inning, but did so in the 10th inning as Luis Robert hit a home run to put the Sox up 5-3. And to talk about this game, no, Steven's giving me the wave. We hear Vinny, but we cannot go to Vinny just yet. The Sox go 5-3, win this one on a Luis Robert home run. They had, I think, 10 hits today compared to the Royals, 6, and walks. The White Sox did end up walking twice today, and the Royals ended up walking twice. So maybe that's the reason they get the win, Herb.
Do you know who hit into those double plays for the Royals?
Sal Perez.
Two of them. What a bum best catcher in the AL. That man's a bum.
Yeah, we should see.
He's not a bum.
Hey, Vinny, did Yasmani Grandal hit a home run today?
What's up, big haircut? Yeah, he hit a home run.
What's up? How you doing? That's Vinny Duber, the CHGO White Sox beat writer. Follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber.
Are you right over there?
No. Oh, man.
Vinny got me.
God.
5-3, the Sox win. We're talking about the crazy eighth inning. We're taking people through it. We already went through the Cueto start, so why don't we take a start in the eighth inning? Things get dicey for Kendall Graveman and the Sox. What did they talk about, you know, after that eighth inning, going into the ninth, going into the tenth, getting the game-winning home run for Robert? Was there a sense of relief in that locker room tonight?
I mean, they were pumped. They won. I mean, listen, I know everybody parses apart every inch of every game here, but I think these guys see it a lot as pretty binary, win or lose. And it was a celebratory atmosphere in that clubhouse tonight, even though the game went the way that it went. There was no, oh boy, we stole one away right there. It was very much, be happy there was a W at the end of the night. So that's how these guys see it.
What are the words that people say about Luis Robert? Because Scott Barlow is a champion of a pitcher, and he murdered that low slider, and he did it with so much ease. He just keeps on going, and he's in the midst of a 14-game hitting streak. Like, are there any words that these guys say about him and just look at him in awe? Because that's what I'm doing.
I mean, in the same sentence, you hear the emotions of both surprise and the complete lack thereof, right? I mean, you're surprised because this guy can you see something new from him every night, right? You see something crazy that you didn't think you were going to see from him every single night. And at the same time, you know how talented he is. You know what he's capable of. And so Tony La Russa's response was, he's going to be doing that his whole career, whether it's a huge home run, a huge defensive play, a huge base running play. They know to expect the unexpected in a way from him. And I mean, like you said, what more can you say? It was in this very ballpark a couple of years ago that he made that insane diving catch in center field. He hit a ball all the way onto I-70 over here. I mean, this guy can do it all. And you're seeing it on a daily basis if you're a White Sox fan.
Yeah, you've been seeing it for the past 14 games, a 14-game hit streak for Luis Robert. Any talk about what the success has been for him or changes this year? Because he started off hot, had a little bit of a slump, got injured, and now it just seems to be back in the swing of things. Is it just health and everything's clicking for Robert at this point?
Yeah, I mean, what do we talk about all the time? It's a long baseball season, right? And, you think about those little valleys for him, and then you see these super high peaks, and you were like, boy, what was I worried about with the little valleys there? You know what I mean? So I think this is a guy that, Herb, Sean, you guys know. You picked him to be your preseason MVP. You know what he's capable of doing. And in order to, be that kind of player, you got to do these kind of things. And he played hero tonight. He played it the other day against the Yankees. This is part and parcel of being an MVP caliber player, and you're seeing it from Luis Robert.
And even though the results weren't, like, mind-blowingly great, I thought the at-bats versus Brad Keller this game, as opposed to the times before, and especially the time they did earlier this season, were much better for the White Sox. They hit them really hard to the tune of 8 hits, but there was a lot of loud outs there. Did they talk about different approach versus Brad Keller, or just, hey, it's a different game, it's Kansas City, we've seen this guy a lot, sometimes you're going to get him, sometimes they don't get you?
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good assessment. I think another good assessment is the Royals aren't very good, especially right now. You know what I mean? Like, this is a team that Johnny Cueto absolutely dominated tonight. If his first outing would have been against the Yankees over the weekend, we might be talking a different story about what, you know, his debut in a White Sox uniform looked like. But fortunately for him and for them, it came tonight against a very slumping Kansas City team. You know, one of the worst offensive teams in baseball. Granted, the White Sox are not too much better if you look at the numbers over the course of the entire season. But hey, this is what he got, and this is what he did with it. This is an important series just because of the volume of games, right? 5 games in 4 days. So, you know, coming off of that Yankees series, you got to get some wins. And this is what they were able to do against the Royals team that they, you know, on paper should be feasting on.
Our guy Eli Stein, who was born here and then moved to Israel, which is now, what, 6:53 in the morning, sent a super chat, and he says hello to you, Vinny. He sent 35.90 in, what, shekels?
Israeli new shekels.
Yeah. Yeah, so he says hello to you, Vinny. I just wanted to pass that along, and thank you, Eli. And Chris Mezick, thank you for your $9.99 super chat. He's got nothing to contribute, just saying thanks to making it easy for this transplant fan to follow the team. Thank you, Chris. Now back to you, well, Sean.
And he's a transplant. Vinny's a transplant out in KC. So how's KC? And you get to meet Johnny Cueto for the first time. So what was it like meeting Cueto and going to Kauffman Stadium?
Johnny Cueto's a happy guy, and I think Royals fans probably remember him pretty fondly. He pitched for their World Series winning team back in 2015. You know, we just talked to him for the first time after the game. You're not able to talk to the starting pitchers on the day they start pregame, so we just got him postgame here. All smiles, as you would imagine, from somebody who had those results. But it was funny. Somebody asked him about, you know, his all these different deliveries, the deception, the stops, the starts, the funky way that he looks when he's pitching, and his response was, "It's pretty fun." You know, it's how he has fun out there. So I think that's an easy guy to like if you're a White Sox fan. And certainly if the results are going to stay this way, that'll make it all the easier.
Well, and I just want to jump in because Fred has a great comment here. Not only is Vinny in the limelight, but he's definitely a working man right now. And also, you're in a lime shirt, too. So, you know, it's a Lime Rush shirt, which aren't understanding.
Is that what he was talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Limelight's a Rush song, and okay. Working Man is also a Rush song, which Vinny is right now, both.
It's true. It's true. Working Man, some fun trivia on Working Man. The first Rush album of which this shirt is taken, no Neil Peart. Neil Peart was not in the band yet. I think I don't know if he was the producer or if he was the manager or roadie or something, but he didn't take over until after that album came out. So Working Man, one of Rush's most famous songs, does not include the work of their most famous member, Neil Peart.
Of their most famous working man. I have a quick question with the Thor's hammer, because Johnny Cueto in his first inning strikes out 3 straight guys, sets down the side, and then Liam Hendricks does it to end the game. So you kind of get an Oreo sandwich here of striking out the side. Who gets Thor's hammer? Is it Hendricks because he was the last one to strike out the side?
Yes. But okay. We did have a conversation about this in the press box. We are not sure if Johnny Cueto as a starter is even eligible to hoist the hammer. So I was hoping that Liam would walk by while we were down there in the clubhouse, but he was otherwise occupied post game, because I do want to get some clarification on the rules. Maybe I'll work on that for you tomorrow, Sean.
That'd be great. Thank you.
And the other day you guys spoke to Ryan Burr after a tough loss, and he said, "I don't care. I want to face whoever's out there." And I questioned 100%. I questioned when he was in the game for the 9th inning. The man went out there and shoved. How did he feel? I don't know if he talked after the game, but I want to give kudos to Ryan Burr because I know I would crap on him if he didn't do well. So I don't know if he spoke or if Tony spoke about it, the performance he gave to extend that game.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you got to have a deep bullpen. And I know there are a lot of people out there with the certain opinion that, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's a safe situation or not. Hendricks needs to be deployed in certain times, regardless of what the score is, kind of thing. I don't know if I, you know, even have an opinion on that front. I can definitely see both sides of that argument. But it's very clear that Tony La Russa's opinion, just from watching the way that he uses his pitching staff, is to save Liam Hendricks for when there is a save situation like there was tonight in the bottom of the 10th. So you've got to have more than just 2 guys, because you sent Kendall Graveman out there and he gave up 3 runs tonight. You know what I mean? You got to have more than just the handful of guys that you use at the back end of the bullpen, because you don't know on any given night, especially in a stretch of games like this where the White Sox don't have an off day, where the White Sox are playing a doubleheader tomorrow, and they need as many arms fresh as they can. You know, there might have been no chance that you were going to see Joe Kelly tonight. We did end up seeing both Foster and Graveman ahead of Hendricks. So, you got to be able to call on numerous guys in that bullpen, not just the few that, grab the headlines and grab the, the all-star appearances and the big contracts and stuff like that. So for Aaron Burr to go out, or for Aaron Burr, for Ryan
Aaron Burr.
Burr to go, oh boy, that's like, that should be a drinking, that should be a drinking game or something, man. For Ryan Burr to go out in a situation like he was put into the other day and a situation like he was in tonight, that's important growth for when you get into those late season games and postseason games, when you don't just got to call on one bullpen pitcher, you got to call on all of them.
I have a rotation question with the weirdness of this whole schedule right here. It's five games versus the Royals. I see the pitchers they have listed. Dylan Cease going tomorrow, dinner in the day. It's Lucas Giolito if he's healthy enough to pitch in the nightcap. But I also see the two fifth starters also scheduled for this series. I know that they haven't talked necessarily about, if Cueto pitches well, he's the fifth starter. But they're giving the other two guys their regular rotation start. Did they speak before the game about what's going forward? What they're looking for, because I see on Wednesday Velasquez is pitching, and on Thursday we still have Keuchel scheduled to pitch. Is there any indication of where they should be going moving forward?
Yeah, it's a mystery. It really is. And here's what we know. Cease is pitching the first game tomorrow. Kopech's pitching on Saturday. They're going to give him an extra day of rest as they start to manage his innings. As for what happens in the middle there, it remains to be seen. They hope Lucas Giolito can pitch the second game tomorrow of the doubleheader on Tuesday here in Kansas City. And then Velasquez and Keuchel would likely go on Wednesday and Thursday. But if Lucas can't go tomorrow, they want him to pitch. They expect him to pitch before this series is over. That would require some reshuffling, some pushing some guys around. Maybe let's say Lucas would pitch on Wednesday, then it's Velasquez Thursday. Dallas starts the first game of the Yankee series on Friday, but then you still have no idea who's going to pitch in the second game on Tuesday. So we're going to find out a lot tomorrow, when we hear who's going to start the second game, because obviously that decision is going to have to be made before that game starts. But the rest of it, how it's going to line up, really remains to be seen. Kopech pitching on Saturday is kind of the only certainty we have right now. As for how they fill in the rest of that, we're going to find out.
Well, and I hate to go back to something that happened before the game, but the whole Andrew Vaughn batting ninth thing, I think people are just confused on the second leadoff hitter term used by Tony. Would you be able to bring some light on maybe why Andrew's batting ninth, especially after back in April when Tony said Andrew earned the second spot? I think people were pretty just confused as why Vaughn batted ninth tonight.
Confused is one word for it. I think I've got about 60 something replies on that tweet, and confused is not how I would describe it, but okay.
That's fair. People are pissed off.
Listen, whether you agree with it or not, the explanation that he gave was you got a guy who can handle the bat, who can hit 300, who can show you that he has very high offensive capabilities in Andrew Vaughn, and Tony likes to have the number nine hitter be able to kind of get things going again before you get to the top of the order, and guys who traditionally, and with this White Sox team and in this lineup today, are the team's best hitters. Certainly Vaughn has earned the distinction of falling into that category. What I immediately thought of was watching Cardinals games, watching Tony La Russa manage the Cardinals when I was a kid. He was kind of famous for batting the pitcher eighth and then putting another guy ninth in the old National League rules when the pitcher would bat. And that was the reasoning back then. And, you remember watching it and going, what the hell is going on here? This is something I've never seen before. Why wouldn't you just bat the pitcher ninth? Well, that was his reasoning back then, was that he liked a second leadoff hitter to be able to turn the lineup over right away. That seems to be kind of the philosophy right now, and he stated it as such. He stated it as a philosophy today. Does that mean you're going to see Andrew Vaughn bat ninth every day? I don't think so. But he tried it out today, and Andrew Vaughn got an RBI. I don't know what you want to call that as being a second leadoff hitter. I don't know. But, I understand the numbers. I think I totally get the whole mix the lineups up. You know, it doesn't need to be the same lineup every day. You got to bat different guys in different places because of matchups and who's hot and everything. So it's not as easy as just setting your fantasy lineup or setting your, you know, video game lineup and letting it sit for 162. So I definitely understand that part of it coming from Tony. I don't know if I would bat Andrew Vaughn ninth, probably not, but that I'm not a manager. If I was, this team would not have any wins. So, you know, I think it's something that you've got to look at and say, if it works, it works. You know, I again, I've stated many times on this show, and I'll state it again, I don't get super, you know, worked up by what the lineup is, but I know people do. I think that's part of being a fan is you just, you know, you say what you would do and why the guy isn't doing it the way you would do it. I get it. It's weird, I think, but there is precedent in him doing it with some very successful Cardinal teams from back in the day. So I don't think that's going to soothe anybody's emotions right now, but that's the answer I can give you.
Yeah, and we thought it ended up might hurting the Sox, honestly, because Vaughn ends up batting in the ninth inning. In the eighth inning, you know, you think if he's batting, you know, possibly he's due up in the 10th inning and not the ninth inning, maybe they have a defensive replacement. That ball gets in a little bit quicker, and maybe Grandal doesn't drop the ball. You know, it's a lot of what ifs there, but, you know, you're just trying to play four-dimensional chess there. I don't want to play 4D chess with Vinny. You might actually have a real question with him.
And Vinny, I was checking your Twitter during the game, and I see that Gordon Beckham attempted murder of a young Vinny Duber as an intern. I mean, what was the story behind this? Man, Gordon, what the hell?
Hey, you see the date there. Royals Media Relations jumped right up and labeled that, but that is the hole that was put in the wall of the press box right behind where I would sit when I was an intern working for MLB.com back in 2012, covered the Royals all year long. White Sox come to town, and Gordon Beckham in July, who, you know, he's doing the games this week for the White Sox, but the White Sox come to town, and that was a laser beam that nearly went right through my skull. So quick reflexes, apparently, by me, just in terms of survival, saved the computer and everything, but the drywall was not quite as fortunate.
You didn't try to catch it, Vin?
Listen.
You got out of the way.
First of all, didn't bring my glove to the press box that day. I'm sorry. But, man, that thing was a screamer. Just doing this was basically the best move I could have possibly made.
He almost put you on a vacation far, far away. I got a little game here, all right? Do you want to talk Royals pregame music, or do you want to do White Sox Royals trivia concert, and then we'll get you out of here? Which one would you rather?
Oh, boy. I don't know. Let's go with the first one.
All right, well, let's go pregame because you tweeted out that the Royals are apparently stealing Thunderstruck from the White Sox. What's going on here?
Listen, I just said, I was here for 81 games plus the All-Star game back in 2012, and I'd never heard that before. But yeah, they were playing a little Thunderstruck. I mean, hey, listen, you know, I get it. AC/DC, you know, you want to be able to play that as much as possible. We heard Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap at one point during the game too. So, you know, maybe the Royals music selector is just on a nice little AC/DC kick. But yeah, that was interesting. I'm sure it fired some White Sox fans up knowing that was the case.
That's like the Browns playing Renegade while the Steelers are in Cleveland. It's, I mean, you don't have the White Sox don't have like a lock on that song, but that is their song.
There's 30 teams in the MLB.
Come on. Just play another song. Like you said, you could play any AC/DC song. They all sound the same. Play a different song than Thunderstruck.
They're all very good, Herb. Come on.
I mean, they're good. They sound the same to me. Thunderstruck, TNT, Dynamite. Look at my singing. It's one of the great. Would you pay for me?
You're a regular Bon Scott.
Yeah. That's the live Brian, one or the dead one?
That's the dead one. When Brian Johnson goes, you can.
He probably sounds better than me now.
Yeah. Well, that's going to do it, Vinny. Thank you for joining us from KC. Go follow Vinny on Twitter at Vinny Duber. He's the CHGO White Sox beat writer, and we'll be giving him some music trivia questions now that he didn't select that to do our topic. So that will be how we end his hits here.
Tomorrow, Vinny.
Hey, I'm going to be here for 4 days, so, you know, we got plenty of time.
I mean, no, I'm saying tomorrow, that doubleheader. Godspeed, brother.
Yeah, that's going to be, you might catch me with, you know, the sleeping eye mask on for the end of the show.
Well, you can also catch Vinny at allchgo.com. You can read his work there, and you can become a member at allchgo.com. Members get premium access to our written content, and Vinny is some of that premium written content. Thanks for the great work, Vinny, and joining us from KC.
All right, take it easy, guys.
Follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber.
And by the way, that AC/DC sounds the same. That's a Brendan McCaffrey thing. Brendan had a perfectly done thing. He would do it under one bed and just sing all the AC/DC songs.
Good old Jim Beige over there. Oh. Jim Beige is one of the best radio bits ever. And if you're bored after tonight, look up Jim Beige 670 The Score. Would it be Jim Gray?
No, it's Jim Beige on YouTube. Like, don't turn off right now. If you're listening on the podcast, pause it. Just pause real quick. Go and turn in to Jim Beige, Brendan McCaffrey's best work. Probably the best work ever I've ever seen at The Score as a person doing a voiceover.
It's so funny.
Like, Chris Tannehill is the GOAT, but the best segment I ever heard was Brendan McCaffrey doing Jim Beige twice, actually. He did one for Aaron Rodgers, and I think he did one for, I forgot the other one he did, but they're both brilliant.
I think the other one was Tom Brady.
Yes.
It's the Babe Ruth of baseball, no? It's gold. And the best way to support CHGL, we mentioned it with Vinny, is to become a member, and one way to do so is by downloading the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up with PointsBet. If you do that right now, you get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. That's not it. Make a $50 or more first-time deposit. You'll receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO Locker. That's $2,000 in free bets, a free CHGO membership, and a free t-shirt from the CHGO Locker, all for making more than a $50 first-time deposit at PointsBet. If you have any questions, you can email pointsbet@allchgo.com, and we will help you out. PointsBet is your home for live in-play betting, and it just got even better introducing PointsBet's newest feature, the live NBA same game parlay. For the first time ever, you can build the perfect live NBA same game parlay only with PointsBet. You can combine your favorite bets anytime during the game, and if you want more, you can also boost your live same game parlays. You can watch live, parlay live, and boost live with PointsBet. Online signup is available in Illinois. You can download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish, all from your phone. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. That's my favorite way to become a CHGO member, using that code, making a first-time deposit of $50 with PointsBet. But if you want to just become a member of All CHGO, of CHGO, you can go to allchgo.com, become a member, you'll get the live shows, you'll get the podcast all for free, but that written content, that's premium, that's behind a paywall, members only. So if you want to support the great writing of Vinny Duber, Ryan Herrera, any of our writers on staff for your favorite Chicago teams, going to allchgo.com to become a member is the best way to do so. Once you become a member at allchgo.com, you do get a free shirt of your choice, and you get access into our CHGO Lounge. It's a members-only Discord where you get to chat with us, the CHGO personalities. Tomorrow, it will be a doubleheader between the Sox and the Royals. Vinny said that, you know, Dylan Cease is going to start game one, so that's interesting. We'll see if Lucas Giolito is used. The first game tomorrow will be at 1:10. We will not have a pregame for both games. No pregame, no postgame after the first one. It will just be a postgame after game two, just to let you know. First pitch is at 1:10. I think that is interesting, too, just that Vinny said that, you know, we have Dylan Cease in game one, and then it's TBD for game two versus Brady Singer, but there is the possibility of it being Lucas Giolito, and then we heard rumors, and someone in the comments is bringing it up right now, that the White Sox are possibly calling up
Davis Martin
from Charlotte today. So it's going to be interesting to see if that happens. I think that they probably have him ready. He's probably on a plane right now heading to Kansas City in case.
Wasn't he the quarterback for the Houston Texans?
No, that's not Davis Martin. That's David. Yeah, Davis Mills. That's okay. Davis Mills. Very close.
I thought it was something. Like, I've never heard of this guy in my life before. We need to call up our guy, James Fox from Future Sox, and see a thorough report on Davis Martin. You saw the numbers, and you said, all right, the man's been shoving out in there in AA, AAA for Davis Martin, but I've never heard of him before.
Went to Texas Tech. He was a 14th round pick in 2018 for the Sox, so he's done a good job working his way up the minor leagues. Was in A-ball in 2019, and then in 2021 he pitched for two teams in Advanced A and in Double A, and then in 2022 he's was called up right after doing well in Double A, through 24 innings, had an ERA of 3, and then got promoted to Charlotte, had 12 innings pitched and an ERA of 1.5. So he's been very effective this year, and we'll see what he brings. I'm not sure what the full repertoire is, but I didn't see his name a ton on early season reports, especially from Future Sox and James Fox and Mike Rankin. I didn't see that name a ton on some of those early prospect reports and stuff. So it will be interesting to see if they end up calling him if Giolito's not ready to go, and maybe we'll get a look at Davis Mills tomorrow. I mean, it'd be our first shot. Yeah, I want to say Davis.
Davis Mills. That's who it was. I did say Davis Mills.
I said Davis Mills because I wouldn't want to say Davis Martin because I thought that was the damn quarterback.
He looked brutal. He went to a Texas school like Davis Mills did too, right? Or played for the Texans. I will mess his name up automatically tomorrow at least 4 times. Just like Vinny's called Ryan Burr, Aaron Burr, I will be calling Davis Martin, Davis Mills, if he pitches tomorrow. I hope he doesn't pitch like Davis Mills quarterbacks.
Wasn't he okay?
Yeah, he was all right.
Yeah, wasn't that the big surprise was that guy was like all right for Houston?
I mean, in their situation with that other guy.
Yeah, that other guy. Yeah. Let's move on and let's talk about our White Sox here. And let's talk about Luis Robert because damn, was that a fun 10th inning. The first couple innings were all right. You mentioned it. They did well against Keller today. I don't think, Keller wowed anybody. I don't think he was fantastic. I'd honestly like to see more runs from the Sox offense. 3 in the first 9 isn't great. Let's go to Brad Keller's pitch mix here and see where he had success today or where he didn't have success. He used his slider a lot more in that first outing against the Sox. Today it was, we don't have the pitch mix. This is fine. This is balls in play for the Sox. You could just see the Herb. He's living in the middle of the plate, and you see a lot of sliders that stayed in the plate, a lot of sliders that stayed in the middle of the zone. Very good to see the Sox take advantage of some mistakes by Brad Keller, and Luis Robert obviously hit a mistake 425 feet to give the Sox the win.
Yeah, and you see, they hit the ball really hard today. It's good to see Jose Abreu hit the ball the hardest that the ball was hit today, like 111 miles per hour, Jose Abreu on a single. Right back up the middle, Brad Keller delivers it. Luis Robert almost takes his foot off. I was so close to celebrating, that he was going to be out the game because he's a tough customer. He's a really tough customer when he faces the White Sox. And you see another no decision. He went 7 innings, only gave up 3 earned runs, which he gave up early, and then it settled down. But the White Sox were hitting him hard the whole game when he was in there. So that's a testament to them adjusting to what they were doing in that first game up in Guaranteed Rate, and now they seem a little bit better. He wasn't as sharp, but Brad Keller is a pitcher that I don't like, but he is a pitcher that I would have at the start of my rotation if I was a team like the Kansas City Royals. That a guy can shove.
Yeah, I mean, he can shove. He can eat up innings, too. He's efficient. And the thing that didn't work for him today, 6 called strikes on his sinker and 4-seam fastball. He used his slider about 50% of the time. So he was trying to just get that slider and hope the White Sox would bail over it and just, make weak contact. But he was too much in the zone, and the White Sox were able to take advantage of today, which was absolutely great to see. And what was great to see, too, Grandal gets back into the swing of things. He hits a 2-run homer. It was a line shot, 106 miles per hour off the bat. And it also seemed like Jose Abreu had a better game today. It seemed like both of those guys turned around today for the Sox.
Yeah, hard hit ball by Jose Abreu. 2 walks, the only 2 walks the White Sox drew today were by Jose Abreu late in the game. That's might be getting him out of his big time slump that he's in right now. Saw the first hit in a long time a couple days ago when they wanted to get the ball. Now Jose's getting a little bit deeper, taking Brad Keller up the middle for 111, and then 2 walks, spitting on a couple filthy pitches where he almost swung at it. Is the maturation, is the next step of Jose turning into the player that we know he can be, because right now him and Grandal, who eventually hit a home run, aren't the players that the White Sox pay money for. This game will be the start of it, hopefully.
Yeah, and you see Eli asking, is Abreu back? I don't know if he's back. It's good to see.
Pretty good at bats, though.
Yeah, some good at bats from him. You did see 2 walks from him today, and the one hit that he did have was 111 off the bat, something ridiculous. Yeah, off the bat from Jose Abreu, 111 miles per hour and a launch angle of 10 degrees there. And that's the big thing with Abreu. What's up?
Just the rope.
Oh, yeah. Absolute rope right back up the middle. Not as much as a rope as Luis Robert sending that one back up to Brad Keller, hitting him directly in the shin.
I guarantee you tomorrow or right now, Brad Keller's taking off his shoe and that his right foot is just got a big ass knot on it. Because he hit it squarely about 100 miles per hour right back to his right foot. And he battling through to pitch 7 innings is a thing, because I know he's going to have some Tylenol and some extra stuff to go to sleep tonight, because Luis Robert is nothing to be trifled with.
Yeah, and with Abreu here, I want to go to his balls in play since April 24th and his launch angle and what the big issue has been for him today, because you know he attacks that first pitch that he ends up hitting for 111 off the bat right up the middle. It was a really nice piece of hitting. He saw a fastball. He went out and hit it right back up the gut. That shows that he's on this ball. But you could see just from April 24th to May 15th, you could see from this graph, this is his hits and his batted balls, and it's by his launch angle, and it's about how many he's sending in each direction. And the more spikes you see, the more out it goes on the screen there, the more hits he has. And you could see, you know, right at zero, there's a big spike, so he's hitting it straight, at the ground there, and there's so many balls just angled below zero. He's hitting so many balls in the dirt, and there's a couple times, especially during the Yankees series, where he's just laid on fastballs. He's hitting them back to the backstop. He's just not on the fastball. It was really good to see him square up fastball today, hit it in 111, right back up the middle. I don't know if he's back. Maybe he's back. I was listening to the Sox Machine podcast earlier today, and Jim Margulis said that, you know, maybe a sign of him walking is actually a bad thing just because he doesn't see the ball too well. He's able to fight off pitches. He's able to use his good eye to get on base, but he's still not doing that damage. Him doing damage today was a really good sign to see. So I don't know if Jose is back. I don't know if Jose is, you know, ready to start tearing things up, but very good sign today from him today.
And to speak to your point, Jose Abreu right now has the highest ground ball rate percentage in his career by far. He's usually at a 45.9. Right now, 51% ground ball rate. That will not play for Jose Abreu. So you could say up to this point, he's had his bad slump. This is it. He will not be the guy that is 51% as a ground ball rate guy. That's not how he plays. So you could see that the walks, and I know Jim said it probably wouldn't, but he's seeing the ball a little deeper. He's seeing what the pitchers are offering to him. That sometimes is what sparks you. Sometimes you just need to get on first base after a walk and say, hey, that was a good at-bat because I saw everything he was throwing, everything he was featuring. I didn't go out of my zone like I'm usually doing right now. I didn't chase any of his sinkers and spike them into the ground like I've been doing. Now I'm ready to play. Now I'm seeing the ball a little deeper. He's not Luis Robert. No one's that guy. That guy's seeing every ball. Did you see the pitch he hit, man?
Yeah, so let's go to it.
It's just dumb. That's like, Scott Barlow is not a crumb bum. He is a champion of a pitcher. And yes, this pitcher shows that he missed his spot. But look at, I mean, I know you guys on the podcast can't see it. It is on the inner part of the strike zone. It is a tight, tight slider. It didn't do its job where it gets a little bit more depth and drops out of the zone. But the guy, Scott Barlow, is throwing 90 plus high 90s. And then he drops his slider. And Luis Robert's like, okay, cool. Nice. Drop the head of the bat and murder your ball. Good job, fake Mike Clevinger.
Yeah, and fake Mike Clevinger has been good to the Sox. Andrew Vaughn hit a game winner off of him. Luis Robert hits a game winner off of him. And like you saw in the graphic there, Salvi was setting low and away, and he got it inside, and Luis Robert turned on it. And, you know, he's able to turn on fastballs inside, and when you give him a cement mixer that stays over the plate, it's good to just see the White Sox do damage against mistakes. That was a mistake by Scott Barlow, and he drilled the hell out of it. And Luis Robert's been the best hitter for the Sox. Let's go to that 14-game hitting streak. Our guy, Steven Nicholas, putting together this great graphic. Before Luis Robert's 14-game hitting streak, he had a batting average of 118, OBP of 204, a slugging percentage of 354, 3 RBIs, and 7 runs. And now during his 4-game hitting streak, or after his hitting streak, he's batting 308, getting that up from 188. His OBP is up from 204 to 345, and his slugging is up from 354 to 477. And the RBIs, he goes from 3 RBIs to 10. He goes from 7 runs to 13. Robert's been fantastic, and this aggressive approach has been paying off for him so far.
One of our guys, Alec S., CC was at the game, almost hit it right to me. I think he was the guy who was cheering wildly. I saw you, Alec. If you're that guy who was literally probably like 5 feet away from that ball and like going wild when you saw the ball hit right to your left. Well, if that was you, man, I saw you. It was awesome to see a White Sox fan be that hyped. And Sean and I here in the CHGO studios were on flame. We couldn't yell out because the Cubs were doing their post-game show after they won a game. You know, who cares about the Cubs? But we were just like, just like high-fiving and just being all inappropriate. It was great to see. God, I hate the Royals.
I don't know if that is Alec, but
that wasn't
looks
him.
Close. Yeah, no, he was above the Sox pen. Yeah, so he's well over. I would have been able to recognize Alec, but yeah, no, he's not in that area. Just a little bit away. And Alec says his MVP bet on Robert is still in play at +2200. Yes, it is, and it's good to see the power come back for Luis. Okay. You got anything?
Yeah, and I earlier had stated that I was going to tell you something that I was asking on Twitter. I was asking mostly, where's AJ Pollock? Because in the end of the game, we could have had a substitution both for Vaughn, or we could have had a substitution for Vaughn in the 10th inning, which they went with Josh Harrison instead. Apparently, according to Alex Rudy, sent me a text or a tweet on the DM, and he said that before the game, Tony had said to Lynn Casper that he was playing both games in the doubleheader tomorrow. AJ Pollock will be. And so Monday, he had the night off. So that was what happened with AJ Pollock, why he wasn't available, which I was expecting to see AJ Pollock either pinch run or at least go out to left field for Andrew Vaughn, as we saw the Avengers in the eighth inning with Andrew Vaughn.
Yeah, friends. Well, let's talk about that tough before we go into Davis Mills, because I got some stuff that I can share with
Davis Mills again.
Well, whatever. He's Davis Mills right now. He's Davis Mills until he makes his White Sox debut.
I was going to call Dave J. Barista Dave J. Batista.
Batista, yeah. I saw that as well. I was also going to call him Batista. Let's just call everybody by the wrong name.
That's my thing.
Med Ran R says, right now I see the Dodgers and Yankees going to the World Series. Prove me wrong, White Sox. There's an old score to settle from 1959. Yeah, I wasn't around for that one. I don't know if I'm ready to settle that score from 1959. But there's two things I want to talk about. That eighth inning play where that double by Benintendi off the wall. I thought Vaughn was too close to the wall. You saw Engel play the double great in the sixth inning. It bounced off the wall. He's right there. He throws it in immediately. It was a great relay. This is why Andrew Vaughn in left field is an adventure. He is up against the wall. It bounces right at his feet, and he's not able to take it in stride, really load up on the throw, and make it one fluid motion. You need to be quick getting the ball in, and it's all about making sure that it bounces, you grab it, you throw. You need to be quicker getting that ball in, and that's the big part of this whole thing with Andrew Vaughn, is he's not an outfielder. You never tried to put him into the DH spot consistently, and this whole idea of him being a left fielder, I'm not buying it. And then I really think it cost the White Sox some runs today. I understand you're more upset about Grandal not catching. We'll track and see how many balls he does or does not catch. But I also think part of it is just the relay throw. The relay throw needs to be quicker from Vaughn. It was great from TA to get it even that close and make it that close of a play at the plate. And obviously Grandal needs to be better. But, you know, the whole second leadoff thing, we try to explain it to Vinny, or at least, you know, set that up for him. Going into the ninth inning, Vaughn would have bat third. So Tony doesn't want to take his bat out. So that means, you know, his glove doesn't get taken out. You don't see Adam Engel or AJ Pollock or Leury Garcia move out to left field. And I think those guys make a better play on that ball. And maybe that ball gets in a little bit quicker. And maybe it's a less rush throw. And maybe Grandal makes the catch. Again, it's a lot of what ifs here. But I just don't love seeing Vaughn out in left field.
I mean, with a team with the bad defense already, doesn't need to add to it by putting a person out there largely doesn't know what he's doing. I don't know what the score was last year with his defensive run saved. I know it was negative, but he doesn't know how to play left field. I don't know what happened. The flashy thing happened. It's something that I was like, all right, he could play a solid left field. He's catching most of the balls that are hit to him, and I don't see anything egregious last year in 2021. This year, it's a lot. Even the ball he caught where he's pretty much by the warning track and he runs in to catch the ball close to the line. Look a little shaky right there. So yes, we don't need to add to our defensive woes with a guy like Andrew Vaughn butchering it up in left field. I'm glad he played left field instead of right field, because Kansas City's right field is a little tougher than the right left field, but we got to find a way where we have outfielders playing outfield.
Yeah,
Andrew Vaughn has to play. He has to play because his bat plays. But the last thing we need in this whole journey is more defensive mishaps, especially with guys playing out of position, with Gavin Sheets doing that Andrew Vaughn doing it. Even had Lurie Garcia in left field in the last inning. So I didn't like that, but I got the explanation from Alex Rood via Tony La Russa that AJ Pollock was not available for tonight's game.
Yeah, and Dave's right. Every player is accountable there, the pitcher, the catcher, and the fielder. I mean, Vaughn is accountable for playing that ball too close. Grandal needs to catch the ball, obviously, and Graveman didn't do his job tonight. Oh. Graveman gave up too many base runners, a lot of hard contact. He just didn't have it tonight, and that's not on Tony. I was fine with how Tony deployed the bullpen. Fine seeing Foster at 7, fine seeing Graveman at 8. Graveman needs to do a better job. I didn't love seeing Ryan Burr in the 9th. You finally did get to put Liam Hendricks in a safe situation in the 10th inning. I would like to just get to those situations earlier. I would rather see Hendricks in the 9th there, but it is a lot of nitpicking. I won't go after it too hard there. And just to go to Vaughn's defense last year in left field, an outs above average of -3 in 153 attempts. This year, -5 yes. in 24 attempts. So he's been brutal.
Anecdotally, I just felt it that he was much worse this year. Last year, while the numbers don't say, I thought he was adequate as a left fielder. He could do the job. This year, he's just lost. I don't know how that happens in another year of experience.
Yeah, encouraging stuff from Liam Hendricks in the 10th, though. Michael Taylor, he goes fastball, fastball, slider, curve, gets the K to Nicky Lopez. He goes curve, fastball, gets the K. And then to Kyle Isbell, he goes curve, gets the K. That's what Liam needs to do. He needs to work in his breaking ball pitches, and once he does that, he'll be fine. He's a great pitcher. He's a great closer. You shouldn't have to worry about him too much, and it was glad to see someone do their job today. So that was good to see from Liam Hendricks. The final thing I want to mention is our guy Davis Mills. He might be starting for the Sox tomorrow in Game 2.
And if you're listening to this, the podcast, we know it's not Davis
Mills. It's Davis Martin.
It's going to be Davis Mills until further notice.
He logged a successful AAA debut back on March 6th. 6 innings, 4 hits, 2 earned runs, 1 walk, and 4 K.
Wait, March 6th?
May 6th, I'm okay, sorry. Let's see. And Davis Martin throws a fastball that sits 91 to 96. He throws a curve, he throws a slider, and he throws a changeup. And this is the notes. He threw 7 straight out of the zone in the first inning, but he settled down to retire 11 in a row. The first homer came on a changeup, the other on a slider. So that's what you're going to get from Davis Mills. Fastball, curve, slider, changeup. We'll see if we need to learn more about him, and I will try to read myself up on some Davis Martin, some future Sox, some James Fox and Mike Rayton, Rayton content.
I hope I never hear about Davis Martin ever again. I hope my guy Lucas is like, hey, I'm good.
Yeah.
I got the nightcap. We're going for the sweep against these Royals. And Herb and Sean's got your post game right after the game.
And we still got 2 more after tomorrow. So even after tomorrow, there's a 5-game series over 4 days. It should be a ton of fun.
Do you know what a Trapper Keeper is, Sean?
Yeah, it's that big one, right? Yeah, yeah. I could get a Trapper Keeper for this. I would probably get like one and put a bunch of stickers on it, right? That's what people do with Trapper Keepers.
Exactly.
So send me in your stickers and maybe we'll get a Trapper Keeper or White Sox Trapper Keeper. But that's going to do it for the CHGO White Sox podcast. Blank Name says, scouting report said Martin gives up a lot of home runs. That's good that he's going up against the Royals who can't hit home runs. Sal Perez is 0 for 17, I think Alex Rood said, versus the White Sox this season. So that's great to see after what he did against the Sox last year.
We got a scouting report for Sal Perez. Throw balls outside the zone. Stop throwing fastballs middle.
Don't pitch to the only guy that can hit. Anyways, that's going to do it for the CHGO White Sox podcast. We had 99 people in here at some point. I think we're up to 88 right now still. You guys are the best. You guys keep it strong. Jake was here from the start. He's here to the end. Edgar was here from the start. He's here to the end. Alex so many Rood. Of you guys were. Yeah, Alex Rood, Alec Sampson, who was at the game earlier and said Johnny Cueto's debut was much better than Otis Mir Despaigne. So
Dave Bautista or Barista was here. My man Baloney. All the great people were here. And our guy Chris Tannehill, too.
And our guy Chris Tannehill with the bobble glove idea for Yasmani Grandal. Hopefully Herb doesn't have to keep talking about the bobble glove and Grandal can tighten things
Chris
up.
Chris Mezick, who sent us a super chat. Super chat. Thank you, sir.
Shout out to our guy Eli, who also sent us a super chat.
From Shekels.
Another one as well, the $5 one that I segued into an ad read. And then we got Vinny on. So just appreciate everyone for hanging out with us. We really do appreciate it. It's been so much fun being able to do these chats. And the other guy was Glenn Wilson. So shout out to Glenn Wilson for supporting us here at CHGO. For Herb Lawrence, you can follow him on Twitter at EchnerWall23. I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. For our great producer Stephen Nicholas and the Fleetwood Mac band for their 1979 album Tusk. We are the CHGO White Sox podcast along with Vinny Duber, and we will talk to you tomorrow. Go Sox!